Thank you for reminding me about recording and Donna and Sebastian. Ooh. What are your thoughts?
About what?
About our program today. Where do you want to start? Do we start at the top and work through the email I sent? Sorry, I should have said that's where it is, isn't it? It's in that email I sent on Monday, I think it was. So the first thing was a general overview of the whole sort of task of teaching autogenics. Do you want to run through some of those things?
Yeah.
Any questions about those things? Let's start with assessment. What have you learned? What would be a question? What have you learned about teaching AT through doing an assessment?
It's super important.
Yes.
Super important to have. Because out of that, what I have found is that I knew where there would be sensitive areas that I just had to be more aware of. Like
Yeah.
with Tess, my case study, it was about her heart. So I was more aware of that, more mindful. And also doing the assessment, it's really good to meet with the person first because it's like you get a sense of the person. Going through all the questions and whatever, and you can ask questions and just. And for me, it's great to have the structure of the questions there and the questionnaire. But when we sit with them and go through it, it's like it's a sense of going somewhere with a person. And that I think it's great to do both. Not just have it sent to us and read through it and then go into straight into session. I wouldn't like to do that. No,
And what
definitely
about
not.
for the client? What do you think it does for the client?
Well, the feedback was that it was, it's so thorough. So it seemed to be very professional, a lot of caring for the therapist, me, as I wanted to really dive into nitty-gritty, she said. So it gives a level of trust as well for
Yes.
her, because it's like it's not just some flippant thing that we do. It's serious. It's serious. And it's a sign of that we care too. But that's what I think anyway.
Yes. Sebastian?
Here there are two things that I would like to outline. Considering just my first case study, I remember that my client, she didn't want to say about all her problems, but when we went to recap the questionnaire, I actually found out a lot of details, and then she was a bit hesitant. And then she opened up. So I think without such a detailed questionnaire, some information might have never come to surface, or maybe because,
Really?
it's like, think about,
Yeah.
I'm thinking about my problems, but
Yeah.
sometimes you might not be aware, maybe something else. But
Yeah.
when you go back, to your childhood, to the relation with your family, I think it's really important. But second thing I would like to discuss, I was just trying to recruit a second client.
Right.
And then I said, so what are you going to do? I explained them about blah, blah, blah. And I said, I'm going to send you a questionnaire, look through it and see how it will go. And the person said, huh? Are you going to diagnose me? This is so complex, and I don't want anyone to know that much about me. And I said, okay, that means this is not for you. So
Right.
someone already refused, considering because they
Yeah.
said, no, it's too much, So and I said, no, it's not about a diagnosis. Definitely, we're
Yeah.
not therapists. No, I'm not going to put a diagnosis. We just need to grab some information just to get an idea whether this is suitable for you and whether AT might help you, isn't it? No, sorry, maybe it's just my understanding. I might be wrong.
No, I think that in general, that's really good. And because you're quite right, we need the information. But the question that they need to ha have answered is why. And so we do need, and I hope you are, in explaining autogenics, and perhaps you have, or of course you have, if you've got to that point of the questionnaire. But actually, it's the process of it and the power of mind. Well, I'm going to use quite dramatic language here, but we know the power of mind, body, memory. And we know what autogenic training can do in terms of that. You don't need to use the word discharge, but sometimes I do. I say we have an autogenic process, which is sometimes about releasing old tensions, old emotions. Memories can come up regarding past illnesses and so on. If we have this information of what has happened for you at the start, then that is both reassuring to you and me. So that might be something to say during the assessment, or something. I've actually got, I don't know if you have too, Donna and Patricia, I've got a sheet which I send out with the questionnaire. And I can't remember what it's called now. It's something about procedure. I will send it to you. And if you want to use it, feel free.
Oh,
It gives
great. Thank
it's an
you.
accompanying document with the questionnaire when you send it out. And so that's just sort of gives the client a little more to read about why we need this information.
Oh, that's fantastic, Jane. Thank
Okay,
you.
okay. There are
Thank you
so
very
many
much.
there are so many things that I've developed over the years that have ended up in the BAS training course. And so that might help you with that one, Sebastian. And maybe even go back.
I think I might need to choose someone else because, being honest with you, I just want them to, to come. I mean, to comply, at least, to engage, not someone that will start and then, no, definitely not, So I think
No,
it's.
oh no, I wouldn't. No, that's fair enough. If you let that person go, because that's how it ended and rested, that's absolutely fine. But they do need to have. It's really important that explanation. You know,
Yes, yes.
they think they're coming to learn a relaxation technique. Why on earth do I have to fill in all this? So they do deserve an explanation. What do you
Yes,
do,
yes,
Donna,
yes,
with
yes.
yours?
Usually, before it gets to the assessment stage, I've had a chat or at least a few emails. So when somebody approaches me, I've got like an information flyer that I can send out. So we have a chat, and I say to them, please don't be overwhelmed by it because it is big. So just have a look at it. We can go through it at assessment so they don't feel that they need to fill it in and then send it back. Most of them do actually, beforehand, but we can go through anything that they don't quite understand. But I don't usually have the assessment as my first introduction as a rule. I've usually had a chat or at least an email, to and fro, so they understand what's coming, I think, rather than I'm interested in autogenics, right, fill this out kind of thing. There's usually a something beforehand so they know why.
Of course, and thank you, because in fact, none of us are starting straight away. No, nobody's, you're quite right. It isn't quite like we're dealing with it now, is it? We've had that introductory conversation by email or on the phone, and there has been a dialogue. And of course we have. Haven't we? We should have covered this somewhere. But getting started, I think that's what it is. So it's a phone call or whatever. I've got a little website. It's nothing too dramatic, but people have sometimes found that and they say, this sounds interesting. What do I do next? And then we start to talk about the questionnaire and we make the dates for that or whatever. So yes, there is that preamble. And I think, of course, Sebastian, you're in a slightly different position. You want to have a second client. It might not have come, the inquiry might have come more from what you were explaining to this person anyway than them needing you, which is slightly different, isn't it? So an information sheet is a really good idea. I think I've got that on my website, the idea of that. And there's no reason why you shouldn't create your own little websites.
Okay.
Yeah. And when you've got your own little website saying, giving an introduction of yourself, that will, when you've completed your training, go on the BAS website in their list of in their list of therapists. This is a really important thing, isn't it? How to engage with the person at the beginning. But thank you, Sebastian. You are absolutely right about the length of that questionnaire. When we were first introduced to Luters, it was 24 pages, was it? I reduced it to 12, of which two were blank, to make notes. And then the 10-page one, it still seems ridiculously long. Every time I try and cut it down, I think, no, because somebody might have had that. I won't leave that out. And even at the hospital yesterday, I was starting to ask a patient about their birth. And we haven't got that on our hospital questionnaire. We think it'll come up in other ways. So we don't put it on there. Just so that the hospital one isn't too long. Because we have to talk the patients through that one. But this guy arrived having had a problem. And we started talking about his birth on that one. So, you know, it's really good that the client in filling it in is reminded of some of the things that they perhaps have just parceled up and put away. Yes, it is a good questionnaire. And because it's good, it needs explanation. Right.
And I have to thank Biff for the name, the life questionnaire.
The life questionnaire, absolutely.
I love that. I use that name all the time now with the other stuff that I do because it's yummy.
It's not mine. It's from Alice.
Yeah.
So she passes that on.
Yes.
It's lovely what we inherit.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, the people that came before us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
Yes, I haven't changed the name of that on mine. I keep meaning to, because you're absolutely right. I love that too. Mm. Yes. Mm. And I've still got some paper ones, so I'm sort of sending those out in the post. And when I get down to about three, I'll change those as well. Hey-ho. So the assessment is important. That's lovely. And as you question, you'll get a sense, of course, of what the person is, where they are in the current place of life. Yes, of course you will. And of course, why they're there. And you've built the trust. You've done a lot of work in that assessment, actually, on your behalf and on their behalf. And so I think then when you come to meet in week one, we've got even Stevens. You've got the teacher and you've got the pupil eager to get on with the job. Yeah. Does that help you, Sebastian?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. And do, you know, ask your supervisor for some suggestions in finding another client or whatever it might be. Yeah. Okay.
Jane, what would you do if the person refuses to do it and just say, I really don't want to do it? Is that it? Even if you say to them, you know, you explain how important it is. It really is. They are not the right person for the job.
Luther would have said, yes, absolutely. No way if you don't complete the questionnaire. I have found, to be honest, I can't remember ever doing that with anybody over many, many years, saying, right, you haven't done this, so you can't do it. I would be much more gentle. Was it Donna? Has somebody said? Or that you know, sometimes you talk through it. Yes, Donna, you said it. If you don't want to fill anything in, we will discuss it in that first meeting because I can't teach you without having an idea of where you're at. And you might have a clinical condition that actually could be affected by autogenic training. And we need to know these things. So it's extremely important that we know what the starting place is. That would be something like I say. But let's talk about it. Bring it with you when you come. And I don't ask people to send it in advance of the assessment. Of course, we're working on Zoom now. So that's the likelihood is that they will send it in advance. But I don't ask for that. If they're coming to my house, I've already sent it by post and said, just complete it and bring it with you when you come for the assessment. And then I'm looking at the assessment and the person at the same moment. I haven't had a prejudgment. I haven't formed an opinion of them before they've even arrived. Which is actually better. But now I'm having to do that because it's Zoom. And I looked at someone's recently. I thought, gosh, that really does look heavily loaded. And indeed, we met in person, actually, because the guy wanted to come and meet in person. And he is heavily loaded. But all right with it. and functioning okay, steady family, all the things, all the surroundings in a good place for him to go into this. So
no, but that's actually a good way, what you said, Donna, about if the assessment is there, they don't want to do it. Because I might not, if it was like Tess is my client case study, she's very, very dyslexic. She's a writer, but she dictates and she writes books. But it was a big thing for her to do such a big, yes. Had I known what I was doing, I would probably say next time, listen, if you don't want to do it, we'll just go through it. I'll read through it. It doesn't matter if you don't write anything, but I'll write it. Yeah. I'll go through.
You're right.
Yeah, I would do that next time. Yeah, okay. And also what I said was that I would delete it off my computer.
Oh, yes. That's so extremely important. Paper is safe, and that can be dealt with later on. I always say it's 3 years. I keep it, and then it's shredded. Yeah, very, very good to delete it off a machine. Absolutely right.
That's good.
And actually, you see, this was always called the medical questionnaire in the old days. And of course, autogenic training was taught by doctors and doctors only at some point. And it is about conditions and what might, you know, need adjusting and so on. So it is important to have that information. And when people understand that, that they'll give it to you. It's not usually a problem. But as Donna says, if they really dig their heels in, well, then that's a signal that they are not going to be, they're going to be resolute in the wrong way, in the wrong direction. I don't know.
I find a lot of times as well, or even though the client might have filled it in previously and brought it with them or sent it, when you then go through it, other things come up because they're like, yeah. Oh, yeah, and.
Mm. That's right. Yes. Yeah. And they feel easy to say that because they're in that face-to-face and they are trusting you. And as long as you explain the importance of autogenic process, I keep coming back to that, but it's not just a relaxation technique. It's something that is unique to each person. Mm-hmm. And I usually, if someone does need persuading, something like high blood pressure, that's an easy example. You could say, suppose someone has high blood pressure at the moment and they are taking medication. And lo and behold, autogenic training helps to bring that high blood pressure down. That might mean that plus the medication is actually too much for that body to manage. So you need to be aware. So perhaps people self-monitor their blood pressure or they go and have regular checks and you check that is in place. So that's, we had diabetes recently, didn't we? That's another, that's another one that's easy to explain. So that's the assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we tick that box?
Yes.
And something might come up later that reminds us that we didn't quite cover it. Hey ho. Anything about actually teaching autogenic training? Is there anything that you've noticed has either been difficult for you or difficult for the client in any of the standard exercises or postures or anything else?
No, but I have a question.
Yes, please. We want questions.
I think I was really, really lucky with Tess because she was so willing and so ready. So what I have no experience is in, she had a little bit of resistance, but she was willing. So when we talked through it, it changed and she would do the offloading or whatever it was. But okay. I haven't had heavy resistance, like, oh, I just don't want to do it, or I don't know why I don't want to do it. It just is. How do you deal with a client that really wants it, but they're too scared of the outcome, if that makes sense? Mm-hmm. How do you do when people, they resist? I know we talked about it, but I would love to talk a little bit more about it because it's probably the next one I'll get. It's probably the opposite of Tess.
I'm going to throw this one at Donna.
Okay. Thanks. Encouragement. You can't make anybody do anything at all. If it's resistant in the offloading exercises, because I find that more, they've come to learn autogenic, so they're they're halfway there with that anyway, but then you throw all the offloading at them. So I get, so that can cause a lot of resistance. It is optional. I use that word because then it gives them a choice, which takes the, you must do it away. And then I explain again and say that maybe during the process, it, these things can come up. So maybe the autogenic process might be hindered if you don't do the offloading. So it's something to just have a go at. And I'd rather, if you can have a go at them while we're in training, then you'll get a feel for it in case you need them later. If there's resistance in the I haven't come across much resistance in the autogenic statements, actually. Maybe there might be a bit, oh, my heart, I don't want to go there, but then it's fine. It's mainly the offloading and the diary. People don't want to write diaries, which, again, you can't make them. You can do it without a diary because you have the dialogue, obviously, between people, so you can get a sense of where they are. And if something happened, they will probably remember it. But again, I would encourage and say it's nice to look back on, because in week 8, you'll be amazed where you are. So sometimes it's nice to look back and see those bumps in the road, or, oh yeah, I did get some tingles there. I didn't think anything was happening. So I can kind of encourage that. As a last resort, and I do use it as a last resort, rightly or wrongly, is the checklist. The car sheet, is it called, I think?
Yes.
The checklist of autogenic reactions. I might just, I think I've given it to somebody once to fill in because they couldn't write a diary. They had problems with writing. So it was easier for a tick box rather than writing. But sometimes I have just shown people and just said, look, this is the sort of thing we might be looking for. Just have a quick look. Then I've taken it back. And then they did start writing a few bits down. But you can't make anybody do anything. Yeah. That's the thing. And if they really are resistant, then they'll drop out because they won't have done it. Mm. That's the end result, I guess, if you can't. But I think instead of trying to make them and saying, you must do this or I can't teach you, explain why we're asking them to do it, and encourage. Mm. I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the, you know, with Tess, she was, it was more with the time. It was like she was so, I mean, her life is so busy, as everyone's lives are, you know. So it's like resistance to find time because, you know, 3 kids, one is autistic, and I mean, she had a lot on. So, and maybe that's not fair to call it resistance, but it was probably more overwhelmed with, she needs to sleep and now she has to work in the morning and evening with autogenics. Yeah.
Pia, as you're saying that, I'm smiling because I can see one of the benefits of the short stitch, because my clients have been so relieved to not have to do multiple practices during that, the second and subsequent weeks. Like, there's a real relief in dropping down to kind of aiming for 3 practices a day. Yeah. And I, you know, I always felt a bit reluctant, like asking the client to do so much. I was curious about how they would be. But I see the benefit of that now, and their resistance diminishes because they feel like they're getting an easier ride.
Right.
Yeah.
In that week 2, you're talking about after the short stitch. Yeah. I actually always say that in week 1. I'm quite upfront with short stitch, just to pick up on that. That this can be a really irritating exercise. You feel like you're doing more. Oopsie. You're doing more of this than you're doing of practicing the exercises. Look at me, what I've done. And so be quite blunt about that. And then, but however, from it's giving you an awful lot of practice on an awful lot of things. You're practicing the postures, you're practicing what it's like to be in the exercise, you're practicing what it's like to come out of the exercise, you're practicing what it's like to find the time to do it, what your attitudes are. There's a lot that you're doing with that little short stitch week. And then when we come to next week, we're going to lengthen the exercises and it won't have to be so often. And I say that in week 1. So they have a, that's the only time I ever predict anything, because I think it's helpful at the start to say it's not always going to be like this. And of course, the other thing to point out is that when you're in bed at night and you're going to go to sleep, it's not short stitch then. It's just right arm heavy, repeated, 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 repeated. So that would be that bit of resistance. But thank you, Bev, because that actually is a, it can be quite a, those little short exercises can be quite annoying. And we can be honest with that. And once we are honest with that, then they will always be honest with you.
Yeah, because I nearly lost her. You know, when she read she had to do it, I nearly lost her. She said, there's no way I can do it 6 times to 8 times a
No,
day. No
no.
way.
And that's another thing that I say, look, it's 6 to 8 times a day as an offer. You can do it more than that if you want to, but it's to encourage you to do as much as you can. But of course, everybody's got their lives and so on and so on. And so it's disappointing if they come back and say they've only done one each day. But even that is a help because we can, what was that like? You know that you were, you know, oh, trying to do this 6 or what did it feel like to manage one in the day? And if you could have all sorts of answers to that, well, achievement. I did one. Brilliant. Or, oh, I felt absolutely dreadful as though I wasn't doing my homework from school and all the rest of it. All of this is part of their autogenic process.
Yeah,
We
I
don't
guess.
have, we don't, yeah. And that, so I think that's what I've learned through the start of teaching short stitch as an opener and nothing else. I've actually valued it more and more because of all of these external factors which the client is encountering. And of course, when we move on to the heaviness exercise, they've already done all that messy work. Are you all right there, Pierre? they've done all that messy work of sitting down, finding the time, and all the rest of it on an exercise that doesn't really matter too much.
I think as well with the if you've got somebody who's tired and busy, which yeah we all are, I encourage people by saying, I understand it's a lot to ask, but if you look at it this way, you're getting a concentrated rest. So hopefully you might feel more energized or more productive. So I kind of sell it in that way that okay, you've got all this stuff to do. If you can take 5, 10 minutes out, depending on the exercise,
That's right.
obviously, and do the autogenics, then you might find you become more productive, or your sleep is better, or something. It depends, but I kind of sell it as the benefits, so that you'll become more productive and get more done actually by doing this. And if you're tired, then have a concentrated rest, and that will give you some benefits. So I'd, yeah, always trying to sell it for what it does for them
Oh,
and can help them.
absolutely. And of course, attached to that is very often, oh, it's homework. I haven't got time now. I'll do it later, and all of that. And you've put it the nail on the head there, Donna. I've got a little slogan that I attach to that one. It is invest in rest.
I love it.
And that puts exactly what you're describing, Donna, absolutely.
I love that. Thank you.
It's, and I also say it's the best quality rest we can give ourselves. Some people say it's even better than sleep because, of course, it's got an intent behind it. And the intent is I'm going to do this for myself now. Yeah. So those are the things that happen early on, I think, aren't they, Donna? You know, when people are kind of getting their heads around finding the time and so on. Yeah.
Thank you.
So that was that question from it. And can I pick up some of the things that Donna was saying earlier? I don't know why I've written that. But with the offloading, yes, it is a choice. But I quite agree with you, Donna. I always say my aim with this is for everybody to get familiar with them. So I take it a little bit further rather than just try it, but get familiar with them, even though they're really strange to do. Because one day you might need them. So, but
My
it is a
encouragement
choice.
goes through every single session, trust me. Once
Yes.
they've been introduced, then that's it.
Yeah.
They go through
And then
every time.
every time there's
Yeah.
something mentioned. Yes.
There's something, yeah.
Yes. And when people are finding resistance to doing the autogenics, that's usually because they need to offload.
Yeah.
So those resistances. The dialogue, sorry, the diary backed up by a dialogue, if a diary hasn't been kept. Actually, I try and avoid the word diary. I might use it once, and then I say, actually, it's a logbook. And it's just a date and a time, and you can just write heavy arm or didn't want to do it, or noise next door, or pain knee, and just make it very, very brief. But the car sheet, I don't know if we've actually discussed it, and we don't need to do it in detail here because, Donna, you've really said everything about it. But it is that three-page document with all sorts of things that people might experience. And that's a really good idea, just to show it to them and take it away again. And then the diary starts to happen. Yes.
Can I just add something to that?
Yes, yes, Patricia.
I do give it to people. But I explain straight away that they don't have to fill it in unless they want to.
Yeah.
As I suggest that they maybe would like to glance at it on occasions, because mm-hmm. some of the AT things are very subtle and they may not notice them or remember them. And if they glance through,
yeah.
they might find themselves saying, oh, yes, I did experience it.
That's a really good way to do it. So you give it out as a standard thing.
Yes, I just give it and make it very casual, saying you don't have to fill it in. Some people like to, but you could just glance at it now and then.
Yes.
I like that. I'm going to do that. That's great.
Yeah, that is good, isn't it? Yes.
Can I ask, Patricia, when approximately would you give that out with your clients?
It kind of depends on how receptive the client is. So when I get to know them a little bit more, when I know that I can do something like that with them and it won't upset them or annoy them or something, quite early on, but just particularly with people who are saying, oh, well, I haven't felt anything. Nothing's happened. You know, they're waiting and telling them that they're not trying to feel these things. It depends. It depends on the client when I give it, but it's usually quite early on.
Yeah, I think what you've just said, the one who says I don't get anything at all, that's a good prompt for giving it. Yes.
Yeah,
I really like that. Yes, thank you. Hey, whose training session is this for? I think it's for me. So. Right. Oh, and yes, actually, just going back to the car sheet for a moment, you will notice it has different sections on it. And really, a lot of them are about discharges and a lot of them are about training symptoms. So you work out which are which. And then when your client says, oh, I got a tummy rumble and I had some lot of saliva in my mouth and didn't know when I was going to take my next breath, it was so slow, those are all training symptoms, all to do with the relaxation response. And then there are others which are more about a discharge, aches and pains anywhere in the body, and of course then there might be some offloading symptoms, some crying need symptoms as well. So actually that car sheet, if anybody does fill it out consistently, it gives you quite a lot of information, which probably you already have. I think that's why I don't pay all that much attention to the car sheet. But there you go. Lovely. Are we moving on? Now, that one was about a general procedure within the procedure of teaching autogenic training. Diaries and car sheets. In the exercises so far, have you found any awkwardnesses? Yes, Sebastian?
Yeah, I had a big problem with my client. So I remember, and I spoke to Donna about it. But when I introduced the crying exercise, I explained it and she said, all right, I'm going to do it. Next week when we met, she said, oh my God, I cannot do this. I explained that you just need to mimic crying. You don't need to think about, but she said that while practicing, it turned into a real cry. and brought back fresh memories, and she was feeling terrible and she has to stop it. I re-explained again. I spoke to Donna at some point. Donna said, try to, you know, to convert the anxiety, because I think she was actually scared of crying, you know. It might be related to something quite recent. She didn't want to say, you know, like something recent this year. I don't know. And I suggested, what about you will say, like, I'm scared of crying. Turn your crying into a scare exercise. No, I mean, sorry, anxiety. Yeah, sorry. And no, she denied. She refused. So, I mean, there was no mean, you know, to determine. I said, okay, fine. I mean, that's okay. You don't have to. You don't have to. But, you know, I reached a point where she was too resistant.
So she did a crying exercise, which turned into real crying.
Yes.
And then all his memories and yes. other things came up. This is really important for us to support. And I expect, Donna, you're talking about this. We need to support. This is good. Mm. It's brilliant. Well done.
Yeah, but she refused. She refused.
Yeah, wait
and
a minute.
Then she said,
no, I'm talking as the therapist to the client. Okay. And she didn't want to do it. And it was absolutely horrible. And she will never do it again. And we can say, well, actually, you did a really good job there. Because what happened was that crying exercise moved itself into you having a real cry. And associated with that real cry, which might not have happened, you might have been have had a cry without any memories. But this is the body and the mind doing its autogenic work. So you did really well with that. And I commend you. And it might not have felt pleasant. Nobody enjoys crying for real. And that's why we normally suppress it. And that's why we can become afraid of it. But actually, do another one. And you might well find it just contains itself within that exercise mode. It might well have just been because it was the very first one that the body was saying, oh, I need this. Yes. And it went right into it. And it put you into a frame of mind of, I don't like this. But actually, when you see it through like babies do, babies don't cry forever. We all stop crying in the end. We don't laugh forever either. Sorry, I've gone into a slight sidestep there. But that's the encouragement and the, it is encouragement. What do we have in our acronym CARE? We have C for clarify. So ask her first what was going on in that crying exercise, which you didn't quite report. Maybe you did in when you were talking to her. And
she didn't, know, she didn't want to talk. She didn't want to talk about it.
No. So, okay. So she didn't want to talk about it, but you can acknowledge, say right back to her in her own words. So you did. Let me get this clear. I often say it like the politicians do. You did a crying exercise, which turned into real crying. And then some memories came up. Have I got that right?
You said yes, yes. And
no,
she
no,
said it
no,
was
no.
too
Hang
painful.
Hang on, Sebastian. I'm doing a bit of role play here. So, okay. So if you are the client and I'm feeding back what she has just said, so you can always say, have I got that right? And the client will say, yes, that is what happened. And then the client says, but I don't want to do it anymore. So then go back into crying is such a normal function. And if you wanted to, sorry, if the mind body spontaneously needed a cry because you've triggered it off by doing the crying exercise, that is brilliant. Well done. And that is about reassuring as well, and then encouraging. So she ended up, now I'm not in the role now, I'm not trying to do that. But can you see what I'm getting at? We need to normalize. It's a normal. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I'm overriding your supervisor here. Donna?
No. I always warn them, if you like. I don't, it doesn't come with a warning, but I always say when I'm introducing the crying exercise that this could happen.
Yes, absolutely. It,
so
at the beginning.
If it happens, so they're forewarned with what to do. If it turns into real crying, you might get a memory up. If it does, cry it out is my advice, really, is to just cry it out because then it's gone. So they're, and usually they're sort of nodding, going, oh, yeah, okay. Mm. And then they know what to do. So I don't leave them, just try this, and it happens, and they don't like it. Mm. They're warned that it might happen when they go into it.
Mm.
If they are frightened of of the crying, usually they won't do it. And then we address that when we get to the anxiety offloading.
Yes.
That's when they can start.
I think,
Well, I was just going to, Sebastian's following up with his client. Shall we wait for a moment, Pia? Is that all right, Sebastian?
Sorry?
You speak.
Okay, just to finalize. So what I noticed is that actually she was trying to suppress those memories. She didn't want to think about it. She didn't want to bring it back to, to her consciousness.
Yeah.
But I think, as you're suggesting, Jane, it's better reassuring, reassurance. Mm. Is it normal? Everyone cries. I do cry sometimes.
Of course.
And is this how the body functions? Isn't it? Is something that you need to get rid of it, isn't it? Sometimes we have to. When you anger, for example, if I'm in a very bad mood.
Right, we won't go there, because Donna has actually said a lot of this already, hasn't she? So it's actually when we introduce it, it's important to say crying is normal. I often say laughing is normal. Neither of them go on forever. It's quite easy to say that. People get a point. I'm sorry, Pia, before we go too far away from it, what were you going to add?
No, I have this sense, maybe, Sebastian, it's because she's a friend of yours too, isn't it?
Or we're not friends. I mean, she was, one of the clients, back home. Yeah. But, I mean, we know each other, but we're not friends. No. I mean, friends, I would say it's a different context. But who knows? Maybe it might be, maybe we know. I'm not sure. It could be possible. I don't know.
Well, I'm feeling that if you can introduce it in a more normalizing fashion, the crying exercise is extraordinary. I always say that, once I've introduced it, and I've also given people the list of symptoms, and they're getting a bit interested in it. And then, but it is not in a box all by itself. It will go into real crying if it needs to. And it very often does, as Donna has just said, on the first time we do it. So bear that in mind, that you might go into a real cry. That'll be a really good thing. Something perhaps you haven't done. And some people haven't cried for 25 years. Mm-hmm. So if it's been a long time since you last cried, this really will feel quite strange, and it might feel quite distressing, but you are always working something through. And if we put it in that language, which is normalizing, and then there's no reason to be scared of it. And the number of times, I'm sure that Patricia and Donna, you've heard people say, I did that crying exercise and it went into real crying. And do you know, my anxiety just plummeted. It just disappeared. And that's so that is the link between being scared of crying and so on. Yes, Bev.
It's really interesting what you've all been sharing, because on the client assessment is one of those questions: do you ever stop yourself from crying? And I've had that on an assessment, so I'm really appreciating what you're sharing and in kind of the normalizing of it, because I'm kind of anticipating when I give the offloading exercise what might arise, resistance, how the client's going to receive that and whether they're going to have a go. Mm. Yeah.
The offloading. Yes, it's that knowledge about stopping crying. But do you know what? As I get older, I talk about babies more and more and more. And when people are quite clearly, or we're talking about crying and you can sense the resistance and everything else, I always say now, who stops the baby crying? Who tells the baby they're not allowed to cry? You can't. It's a natural mechanism. And it's natural for the baby to have to do it when they're in pain, to ask for help or whatever it is. And once that is gone, and once they're settled down, they're absolutely fine. They stop crying. But you can never tell a baby to stop crying. You can tell small children, adults, ourselves, we can tell ourselves to stop crying because we don't like it. We don't want to go there. But actually, it's a good place to go. And then there's the thing about having a good cry. But that's another story. Yeah.
That made it for me. I'll never forget you shared that. I'll never forget it, because Tess, you didn't really want to do it.
Yeah.
And I said, well, it is a natural thing, Tess. Have you ever heard anyone saying, I had such a bad cry?
Right.
And she Actually, I said, because it's a good thing.
Right.
And that did it for her. So I'll never forget you and what you said. A good cry. So thank you for that one.
Well, I'm going to do what Bev did earlier and ascribe the true originator of that comment. It was Anne. Anne said that to me one day, and that was my sort of thing. Oh, of course. Oh, yes. Yeah. So
thank you. Thank you, Anne.
One other thing, going back to the crying that I do as well, is pay attention or draw their attention to the offloading, just the words offloading, because sometimes we can get stuck in the, I've brought up these memories, I don't want to go there again. So, and I know the memories won't go, but the charge can go out of it once you've offloaded. So if they can go through it, they might get into their head kind of the idea, well, if I cry this through, maybe it won't be as bad next time, or maybe it won't be there next time because it has been offloaded. So that can be a bit reassuring that, I've got to do this, but it still happens. So I'm still going to be upset. So I'm just going to be on this cycle of having to have a cry every other day for the rest of my life. It doesn't work like that. The clue's in the name. It's an offloading. So you've offloaded it.
Yes.
This is a good point.
That's a really, really good point, actually, because offloading it should be more prominent, certainly in my teaching of autogenics at that point. Just remember that concept. That's what we're doing. Yeah. Lovely. Patricia, anything to add?
Not sure.
No. Okay. Right. Well, we've sort of moved on to the next thing on our topic, which is the offloading.
Bev was I'm looking at Bev and thinking about Pia. I'm sorry, wake up, Donna. Pia, you put your hand up just before we move on.
A very quick question. In our notes, we have the stages of autogenic exercises.
Yes.
And it was when I read this, I said, oh, goodness me, this is happening. Yeah, so I loved it.
Yes.
Are we allowed to send that out to our clients or not?
I don't know about anybody else. I don't, because we've just got our autogenics. I think many times people say it. They say, as soon as I sit down like this, it's like I'm almost in the state before I've started. That sort of thing. So I think I'm a great believer in not giving too much information, actually, that when it arises from the client, we can say, yes, there is something called the stages of an autogenic, and stage one is just what you've described and you're finding the positive. And just leave it at that, because otherwise we get too much thought going on during our practice. And so if they are going to sit there wondering if they're in stage three or four, then they're going to start questioning whether they're doing it properly and all of that. I think it's too much information. That's my take. So I wouldn't. I think it's just nice for us to have as background that we can give to them when the moment arises and say, yes, actually, that is what happens.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you.
Donna, that's about a principle, isn't it? About giving people too much to think about.
Absolutely. I agree with less is more. Because we want to turn this off, not turn it on.
Yes.
Through the whole thing. But you get curious clients, which I love as well.
Mm.
And I play it by ear, really, with each client. I give them the bare minimum until they ask the questions.
Yes.
And then obviously I answer them and we can go with it. But I don't load them up with all this information because I don't want them to think, like you just said, we're turning this off. Mm. So don't think about it. Just sit like this and do this.
I think too much over information can be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And frightening. They think some, you know, especially in early days, scaring them, like, what have I signed up for? You know, it's they're scared of too much information, I think.
No, I was just meaning if somebody has really, really curious of the stages and the brain waves and whatever, you know, if they have a curious mind and they say, this is what I'm experiencing. Like with Tess, she says, I just disappear. There is no me anymore. And we had a a really good discussion about, mm-hmm. and I said, there is different stages. I couldn't remember what they were called, but I said, there is different stages of it, but I didn't give her anything. But well, yeah, she liked it. There was different stages, you know, yes. There's a relaxation, yeah. And then blah, blah. So that's good to know. Thank you.
Well, I'm thinking that I don't know of a stage which is linked with I've disappeared and I'm not me anymore. And hearing you say that just now, I'm thinking actually that can go either way. It sounds like Tess really enjoyed whatever that was in a space or whatever the language might be. But somebody else will have said, oh, I had to close. I couldn't bear it. I didn't know where I was. Was I really? And so on. So there is no set answer to any of this, which is exactly why it's a good idea, as Donna says, wait and see what they tell you and what questions they ask. And then actually the main question on that, I wanted, even as you said it just then, I wanted to say, oh, what was that like for you? What was it? Was that okay? And if she said, oh, it's wonderful, it was just wonderful, nothing mattered, it was absolutely brilliant, yeah, lovely, okay, it's great, I don't care what stage that is, that's something wonderful that the client has experienced. Yes,
yeah. Very good.
So I think we need to put it in its place, don't we? Yeah,
thank you.
Okay. We're on the, so that was the crying exercise. These are the perennial questions that come up. So lovely, but it's gone into offloading as well. And the reminder, offloading is actually only offloading. That's all. And what were Luther's famous words about the anger exercise? I say famous, but they're on the sheet somewhere. Maybe they're not.
No, they are. I can't remember. They are.
Is that about the sweeping it up?
That's it.
Yeah.
Yes. These are just words in hot air. So just sweep them up in a dustpan and brush. And that's not a violent thing to be doing, is it? It's just tidying up and put them in the bin. That's where they belong. Yeah. Okay. Do you think we've done offloading? Any other aspects of offloading that you, when do you start to teach them, for example?
I think there's some flexibility depending on what's coming up for the client. So my second client, she was having some twitching and jerking. So I introduced the loosening up exercise with heaviness part one.
Right.
Okay. Noise exercise. And then in heaviness part two, I introduced the anger control inventory as an optional exercise. And we had a little bit of a chat about kind of, you know, noticing, like you shared with us, Donna, kind of just introducing that idea of kind of noticing the things in life that might irritate us and, you know, make us angry, and that there's a spectrum, and as a precursor to kind of, you know, the anger offloading exercise for next week.
For next week, which would be?
Warmth.
Heaviness too. Yes, that's right. It's going to be warmth. Right, with you. Okay. Right. Lovely. That sounds good. On the whole, I don't give... what about the noise exercise? When do you give that?
Yeah, I gave that this time at the same time as the loosening up exercise. Yes. My first client, I did it with the intentional crying exercise.
Okay.
And... And for reasons I explained in my case study, you know, I want to give both of those together. Mm-hmm. And I could have separated it. I could have done one. But I guess what I'm trying to do is kind of keep it as simple as possible and minimize what I'm giving out to the client.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's a good idea. I think on the whole, I mean, twitching and jerking, if that's been happening with short stitch, which it would have done, wouldn't it? Because you gave the loosening up with heaviness part one. So that would have been her report. And unless they were really, really disturbing, I wouldn't have done it quite that early. But as you say, you get the sense of what might be a good way of doing it. But there is the other side of the coin, which is we are establishing some kind of process which is going on through the basic AT. And so on the whole, I don't introduce any offloading until week three, which is heaviness part two. That's my way. That doesn't mean, and I wouldn't. And with heaviness part one, I think actually that's a big step from short stitch into staying in the exercises much longer and so on. And I would just stick with that. However, you're absolutely right, Bev. If the twitching and jerking is really a very, very annoying, or, you know, you feel that that's going to disrupt her other practice too much, then give it by all means. We can be flexible. Of course we can. And I don't know the client or the situation. But as a rule, I start with the noise and the loosening in week three. That's my rule of thumb. And funnily enough, if I do start them at any other times from my sort of normal, I think I've learned over the years this is the way it fits best, etc., etc. If I do say, actually, I think this person needs the crying exercise more than the anger one, I think I'll give it to them. They come back the next week, they haven't done it. Mm-hmm. It's really strange. The anger one, I think, is more normal, shall we put it like that? Everybody's got some frustration or something going on in their lives. Absolutely everybody has. The crying exercise is so off the wall that it's actually better to have given them the anger one beforehand. Sorry, I've now gone off piste and I'm just moving into that next. So, but thank you, Bev, because I don't know the ins and outs of what you were dealing with. So
yeah, and one of our weeks was a week and a half due to availability. Yes. So,
okay.
Yeah, so it kind of... Yeah. Yeah, and I was surprised how well she took to the noise exercise that she really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that, you know, you never know how a client is going to respond.
No.
That's what I'm learning, actually, you know, that I can't have any assumptions.
What a good learning that is. Absolutely. Top of the class learning. No assumptions. That's why we have to ask the question, how was it? Why was that difficult or whatever? Yes. Yeah. That's why we need to ask the questions.
Mm-hmm. I do give the noise. I give the offloading in week two.
Right.
Through experience working with people with chronic fatigue and pain, because when they go into the longer exercise, they can't tolerate it with the twitching. So then they hold that for a week until they come back. So I do give it to them before. And I make it very easy, you know, just get up, have a shake about, make some noise. And then I kind of reintroduce it again later on with like, don't forget, we've already done a bit of this. And I'll go more into it. So I introduce it maybe not as an offloading exercise, kind of.
I do that too.
Yeah, and there's lots of people with pain and fatigue that get restless legs and they can't tolerate the length of it without having something to do.
Absolutely.
So I've given it to them to shake, like have a shakeout first, and actually it does settle them. But if you leave it till the following week, that's a week lost because they haven't known what to do and it's become really uncomfortable. But that's just, I guess, the clients I've been dealt, I guess. Yes. That's my experience with it.
And you're absolutely right. I offer, because they're such normal things, the offloading exercise. Yeah. Sorry, Sebastian, we haven't forgotten. They're such normal things that it's very easy to introduce them casually, those particular ones, the loosening up and the noise. Because so that's lovely, and to match it up with what they're reporting, absolutely. And as for not doing any practice, I always say, oh, why didn't you email or phone? We've lost a week.
So but the amount of people that still don't,
I say, know.
Please do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And then, I didn't want to disturb you.
No. No, and that's the joy of emails, of course, is you pick it up when they're not going to disturb you. But anyway, that's another thing. Sorry, Sebastian, you had something to add. I hope you haven't forgotten.
Yeah, it's just for Donna. I'm just curious because I follow the sequence. So, Donna, let's say if you introduce the loosening up or noise exercise at an early stage, do you tell them the rationale? Do you have like, I don't know, do you tell them the story? Do you give them details or just quick, we kind of do an exercise and that's it?
I tend to, actually, I'll have to think. Put myself back in the session. We obviously come in and we do the short stitch. Then I think I introduce the arms and we do that. Then I think I get them to, I will introduce it in the gap between the arms and legs because this is part two. So I split it up. And I say sometimes, you know, it can, we get just tension. I think I call it sort of tension or something. So sometimes you just have a quick
Brief introduction.
It's a very brief introduction. Okay. Yeah. I introduce the offloading. I talk about it with an anger awareness week.
Mm-hmm.
But I properly introduce as an offloading, I suppose, with the anger. It's kind of spread out. So it's not, right, we're going to do this and it's a big thing. Mm-hmm. I lead them gently into it. And I find that they respond better to that because it's coming at them. It doesn't hit them. I slide it up to them rather than this is what we're going to do today. And most people.
Also, it is attached.
Sorry.
Well, but it is already attached to what their report is, isn't it? So yeah. You're picking up some of their discomfort, which is, might be interfering with how much practice they're doing or whatever.
Mm.
Yes. I love that. And yes, so it's no bits of paper with it. And when you said part two just now, you mean the second part of the session.
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, when you do legs.
You've done the arms, and then that's in heaven as part one, but in the teaching of it, you've broken it down into arms and then into arms and legs. So between those two. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes. Just on that note, so Jane, in the week, so heaviness part one, if you're not introducing the offloading exercises, does it not feel like kind of just lots of exercises? What fills in the space between them, just as a recap?
It's okay. They've come back. They've reported on short. We've done a short stitch, of course, and them or a few of them. And then they've reported. And then I've introduced the exercise all about having those questions to explain, not too much. Actually, that session might end up being a shorter one. And if it's been significantly shorter, like sort of 40 minutes or 45 minutes or something, I say, actually, we spent longer on week one. So if they're worried about money's worth for minutes, I say, actually, we always spend longer on week one, and week two is very often quite short. So I really do only focus on heaven as part one on its own. So we've done then we do an exercise with arms only, a bit more discussion, not very much. I might do two exercises of the short arms one. We do, because that's actually one time when, although we say only ever do one at a time, actually that's quite short, and it gives them the flavour of a slightly longer than short stitch exercise, got to a close, and we do it again, and they get the flavour. And I say, of course, at home you'll do a third one after that. So I'm always very careful with instruction to make sure that they've got that three times a day and all the rest. Sometimes, especially with a group, there'll be four people out of the group who get it absolutely straight away, three times a day, three exercises in each session, three repetitions of each phrase, dot, 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 all absolutely fine. There'll be one person who says, I can't work this out. I don't know what this is. And so you need to go through it again quite soon. So there's quite a lot in week two, actually, when they are picking up the new structure of their practice. And it's not little and often anymore. We've got three times in the day. So I repeat this over and over. If you've only got one person and they've got it, you don't need to do it over and over, but well, that is what can happen.
Yeah, so you do the short stitch to recap the previous week, then the review of the week, and then you do the first practice in one of the postures of heaviness part one.
Of course, you're going to explain it.
Yeah, you do the short form, potentially two rounds of that exercise, and then check in after that exercise. And then the third exercise would be, would you go into the long version?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. I never, ever send anyone away with a new exercise that hasn't been done with me. That's really important. So, yes. So then, yes, the third one will be, yes, we start with the short stitch, then it's the short form. You might do two of those. That's fine. And then the long one. Right, we're going to do this today. I don't want you to practice. And I get them to tell me what day we've agreed. So you're going to do arms for how many? That was 3 days, wasn't it? So when are you going to start the long one? And if they don't tell me, then I remind them. Okay. But we're going to do it now so you know what it feels like. But don't do it until whenever. Do people stick with that, Donna, in your experience?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. Well, if they don't, they haven't told me.
Okay. Well, you would soon rumble that, I think. But quite often, people, that the long one is the one they've gone home with, rattling around in their heads. And occasionally, it's very rare, somebody will come back the following week having completely forgotten the short form and they've done the whole week on the long one. And it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter as long as it was comfortable for them. But I said, oh, so we haven't had that progression where your body's got used to that. No, I liked it. Oh, dear, I remember now. Yes, I should have done that. Doesn't matter when it happens. Cool. Right, well, we've got as far as heaviness, but we've done quite a bit of the offloading. What about introducing and explaining the offloading? Because it is quite a big... Or maybe you're just developing your own language around it, and that's absolutely fine. We don't have to go into it. Pia?
I am so grateful for those offloading. So I think my enthusiasm dropped off, because I tell you, when I learned them from... Because I never, as you know, I never got them.
No, back at, no, they hadn't been invented then, no.
So I never learned them. So when I did the course with, because I wanted to do it in English with Nita, I learned. But my life, I do my own work and whatever with another facilitator. And I didn't really have anger. I didn't really, there was nothing. It was just, life was good. Mm-hmm. Holy smokes. Then I get in the situation with the AT meditation, and that was when my whole life changed, because of the person that I saw in the meditation kept popping up. You know, the last exercise kept popping up, and I could not understand what it was. But anyway, that spurred me on. This is, by the way, why I moved so quickly. And in all that, I was so angry. I was so anxious. I just wanted to cry. And I used all of the offloadings, and I did it. I went berserk. I cried like a baby. I did it with dry crying. I did it with the anger sitting in the car. And I was saying to people, you know, I'm amazed that I have a round steering wheel, because I was actually so angry. I sat and I hammered on the steering wheel when I stopped the car in the bush, you know, on the road, because I didn't want anyone to hear me. So the experience I've had of these offloading exercises, I can't tell you how grateful that I am, because I know they work brilliantly.
Yes.
And I just know the feeling that I got out of doing them. And that's what I transcribe to them in a way, or transfer to them, not talking about me, but saying offload that pressure that sits. So, you know, I do it in my own way, but...
Yeah.
She had no problem doing them. It was not one she didn't like to do, but we dealt with that, you know, but it was, I am just so grateful that they're there. Yes. I think it's such an add-on to autogenics.
Yeah.
Such an add-on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really good.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And your enthusiasm is really so lively and refreshing for all of us too, because it's brilliant. I can remember similar experiences for me, and I had learned autogenics like you without them. And then Luta came over and introduced them. So I was in that very first audience of them. And I had, have I told you this before? I had every single one in the book. We had a day on each one, not a whole day on each one, but it was a target for each one. But when he did the crying exercise, I had every single one of those symptoms. And I had a runny nose. That's one of the symptoms. And suddenly, you know, he was talking about the crying and I suddenly had a runny nose. And there it was on the page. And I was rummaging around in my bag and I couldn't find a tissue. And I was, and I had to, I stood up in a room full of 20 people. And I said, I'm really, really sorry to disrupt everybody. Please, has anybody got a tissue? And several people waved tissues at me. And I said, I'm just experiencing every single crying need symptom that you are talking about. And that was my amazing moment of, my God, I need this, obviously. So, yes, I'm absolutely behind you there, Pia. And we have to not be too evangelical about it, you know, because some people have that resistance, of course, and they want to stand back and they don't like the idea. So it's up to us to put it in a framework of normality. Yeah. And that when you start to do dry crying, yes, it can perfectly well lead you into something else. And that's fine, because you're going to get to the other side of that, just as we do with laughing. Nobody but that's laughs. Where it
needs to be like nonchalant about the whole thing as well.
Isn't it? It is, yes, yes. Yeah. Because for many people, especially when they've suppressed a lot and they are suffering from anxiety, you just know that they need to do the crying and they need to do the anger. But you can't say, you need to do the crying and you need to. No, it's got to be an evolution, which if we have our structure, which we do for when we introduce it, and we've all got our own, and that's fine. Don't leave them right to the end. We have in the past read some case studies where the student has been afraid of introducing the offloading because they're not so familiar with it themselves. So they leave it to the end. And in week 7, the client is introduced to the crying exercise. That is far too late. I'm sure you can realise that. You need the intervening weeks of, you know, from week 3 or 4, whichever it is, of a 9-week course. You need the intervening weeks where they are trying and failing, well, those are the wrong words to use, deciding they don't want to, they've got the resistance. We need all of those weeks to have a chat through it all as we go, which is going to be the case for you lot, I can tell.
Can I add on the anger offloading? For me, I think it's very important to stress to the client that it is safe. It's safe to do it. It's not harming anyone, especially for the people who are resistant to anger. Oh, no, I can't do that. That really helps, you know, to explaining the obvious. You know, you're not hurting that person. You're not harming that person. You're doing it for yourself. You're offloading that anger safely.
Yes.
Good point.
Absolutely correct. I mean, more than correct, essential. Thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it can be quite fun, actually.
Yes.
And I mean, I share with my clients that sometimes the things I get angry about or so annoyed at, when I've done it, I end up laughing and going, you silly moo. Yeah, but that's, you know, then I've offloaded it and they're like,
Yeah.
So they get a different side of it. It hasn't got to be this horrible, deep, dark anger. It can be start with a frustration. You know, and I use something really simple and you can have some fun with it. When else do you get the chance and the permission to say exactly what you want to say? Stamp your feet a little bit if you feel like it and just have a bit of a paddy.
Yeah.
And it's without the other person retaliating.
That's
the best part for me. They can't twist your words or answer back. They just have to listen. And
Well, they don't listen, of course, because they're not there.
But I think
I take your point. Yeah, of course. I've had, we've all had lovely stories, haven't we, of people having done the offloading. And I remember the woman who was driving to the supermarket and she decided her mother-in-law was in the passenger seat. Have I told you this story before? Anyway, she let rip at her mother-in-law, who wasn't in the passenger seat, and had a right go at her. And I think somewhere in the dialogue, I think it might have been me who said, and isn't it wonderful that we can actually say the things we would never dream of saying in reality? And that's the fun of it. It was like, ooh. But her story went on, and I got to the supermarket and I was about to get out of the car, and I suddenly realised my daughter was in the back seat. Now, her daughter was not in the back seat, okay, not in reality. No, what she meant was, but we were all thinking, ooh. And then, so she took another 5 minutes to have a go at her daughter. Mm. And so, and she was roaring with laughter as she told the story, which was such fun. Mm. And you're absolutely right, though. It's making it normal. That's the first thing. But then, Patricia, yes, because the person isn't really there, isn't there, we are doing this solitary for ourselves. And that's where we get more out of it. Because it was just as this story was, mother-in-law in the passenger seat, but actually daughter arriving in the back seat. The exercise has led her to that, and she realized it and realized there was a connection. I don't know, either in the style of the anger or whatever the connection was for her. And that would not have happened if she had been talking to somebody else about it. And I think that's a really important thing. It's that solo work that we're doing alone. And it is a challenge to do. And some people can't go near it. And I don't ever force them. I've got somebody with quite severe ADHD at the moment on my group, and he talks far too much, and he's really, really difficult, and he can't do it. And so I'm saying, well, that's absolutely fine. You might find a way one day when you suddenly find yourself stamping your feet or kicking a football hard and realise there's some anger in there, and that might be a good thing. So I tone it down for some people. Yeah.
Right.
But laughter.
I'm just popping to the loo.
Well, it's 11 o'clock. Is this time for our British 11s?
Probably is. Wee time.
Yeah, add wee time. Absolutely. Thank you, because I was looking at the clock just before you said that, Bev.
So, I know I've had an early start this morning, too much food. So, yes, I'd better go and empty myself.
Right. Shall we go and get a cup of coffee? Do you want 15 minutes? Just 15? Is that long enough? It probably is. Yeah. Okay, we'll do that.
Brilliant. Okay. Thank you. See you.
See you shortly. Okay.